Hey, this is Winston Zeddemore, CEO of Zeddemore Industries and member of the original Ghostbuster team. You're listening to Why We Bust, brought to you by the Windy City Ghostbusters and Memoriam Development. We're talking about members in the community and giving back. So suit up, shut your traps, dial in your PKE, and keep busting. Because it still feels good. And before you ask, no. I did not catch the number of that ghost train. Sorry, I missed it.
Welcome, everyone. It's a special holiday edition of Why We Bust. The Windy City Ghostbusters are proud to present this this episode to you today. And it's a little bit outside the norm. But before we get to that, I just want to make sure everyone knows, you know, we are not gone. We've taken a bit of a break between seasons. We finished season one strong. We had probably more than 30 guests, and Matt and I really got to meet some incredible people and have some fun along the way in season one. And we are going to be back in January for season two. So you will see something from us. Matt and I are going to get together, kind of talk about what to expect. And we'll make sure we broadcast that conversation for you. And we're excited to be back in as a regular presence for everyone in season two of Why We Bust. So in the meantime, this is our holiday special, and we're going outside the box a little bit. We're not interviewing another Ghostbuster today, but we are keeping on theme, and that is bringing smiles to people's faces, personifying beloved characters to spread hope and cheer and happiness, and that's what Jack does every single year and has done for so many years of his life. And if you are not familiar with Jack Sanderson, please check out his documentary. It's called Becoming Santa. It was from 2011. I think there's a few different movies with that title that have come out since then. So make sure you're looking for the 2011 documentary Becoming Santa. You know, award winner at South by Southwest, picked by Oprah's network, and broadcast by them. And it's just an annual watcher in the Calvert House. My wife and I love it. It just brings so much joy and cheer and spirit every time we see it. And we talked to Jack about lessons that he's learned as Santa Claus and things that he keeps in mind as he meets people and keeps focused that this is an experience for them. What can he do to make sure that their experience is as good as possible? And sometimes people make that challenging, and he has some great words of wisdom that he keeps with him as he, he just has thousands of kids every single year, kids and adults, line up to share their Christmas wishes with him. And sometimes that's fun, sometimes that's easy, sometimes there are challenges, and he goes over some of that, and he was nice enough to share that with us. So I'm so excited to bring this interview to you. Jack was such an incredible person to meet, and I can't thank him enough for his hospitality. We got to talk in person, and so if you see me, I'm a little damp. I was loading in the recording equipment in the middle of just a torrential downpour this fall, so we've had this in the can for a little bit of time as Jack was traveling through Chicago over the fall, and we were able to meet him then. So this is this interview was a lot of fun. I think you're going to enjoy it. Before I go, I'm all set for the holidays. I got my Santa hat, my Ghostbuster 2, gray uniform, just like the boys in gray wore back in 1989. And I am excited to relive this conversation with you. Once again, this is Jack Sanderson, star writer, producer of the incredible documentary Becoming Santa. Please make sure you check that out after you watch this interview, or if you're watching this after it's live and it's already posted, pause this, go watch the documentary, and come back, and this can be a companion piece for you. Once again, thank you so much to Jack for his generous time. Thank you all for your patience waiting for Why We Bust to come back, and I hope you enjoy this little holiday interlude, this holiday special, and we will see you all in January. So without any further ado, here is my conversation with Jack Sanderson.
Jack, we did it. We're here.
We made it.
Yeah, it was battling the rain and thunderstorms and
yes, and it's starting to clear.
It is. Yeah, so nice. Maybe the sun will come out and give us that lighting that I was hoping for. But I can't thank you enough coming to Chicago, taking some time to talk with me. And one of the things, the main thing with this podcast is we're talking about people that do good in the community. And
okay.
I think mostly we talked about the Ghostbusters that are doing it, but there's an aspect of taking on a character and using the built-in nostalgia or affection for those characters to, you know, to have a clearer path, spread joy to other people. And I think you always stood out to me because I love Becoming Santa. It's a
Thank
tradition
you.
In my house. It's a multiple viewings a movie for us. And so you are a part of our season every year. I'm sorry if that might weird you out.
But no, I'm honored.
You are a part of our Christmas, and it doesn't feel like the season has really
You're
gonna
have
off,
to pull back on it a little bit as your children get older.
It's gonna happen.
And they believe in Santa.
I know. It's yeah. gonna be the well we have it yeah, don't worry.
We tell people it's not for anyone who's expecting a visit.
Right. Well, my daughter saw your picture when we were exchanging messages.
Oh yeah.
And I said, well, that's Jack who's friends with Santa Claus.
Yeah.
So if you do have anything you want to tell Santa, let us know, and I'll let Jack
yeah.
know.
I'll let him know.
But yeah, so for my wife and I, it's an essential part of our season. And for anyone that has not streamed the movie right now, I believe it is on Amazon. If you haven't seen it, the DVDs are out there.
Mm-hmm. It's also on Canopy.
It's on Canopy. Great. Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, we have it on multiple formats in our house. So, but you know, I think let's say that you talk in the movie that, you know, Christmas in your house was how many Christmas trees?
There were three trees.
Okay. So yeah. Three Christmas trees.
And themed. So okay. There was the main tree in the living room, which had ornaments my grandmother had made, ornaments my parents had purchased over the years, and then ornaments that us children had made at school were all on the back.
Oh.
The children's ornaments were all around the back of the tree. And then in the dining room, there was a tree that was just lions and lambs.
Interesting. Okay.
All like, well, you know, it's peace when the yeah. lions lie with the lambs until right. they get hungry. But it's all lions and lambs and like puffy little lambs and yeah. felt lions.
Interesting.
And, yeah. And then in the family room mm-hmm. was sort of the dogs, because we had six dogs.
Oh,
it was
wow.
the dog's Christmas tree,
okay.
which had like bones around it and, you know, different dog ornaments.
That's funny. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Dogs love Christmas.
Apparently. You know, ours, yeah. We'll tell, I have a story about that after we're done. But it's, you know, with that, in the movie, we can kind of cut to that. If the green light's on, it's still.
Okay, got it.
We'll still go.
Okay.
first time I'm
it's
doing
a calming
this.
We can look at the calming view
yes.
of the ocean floor
on the yeah.
on the coral reef
favorite. Now if it shuts yeah. off to black, then we know
then
we're
done
in trouble. But
we've been canceled
by ourselves. So you in the movie you talk about Christmas didn't have the same feel to you anymore after the passing of your parents and
right.
And you were searching for something. Did you? I want to get into a little bit about the process of how does even become a documentary. But was this a feeling? Did before you made the decision to become Santa, what did Christmas do? Was it always a bit of I should feel a little bit different this time of year? Was there a nostalgia thing that was pulling at you? You know, what did it mean before this process? Complicated, probably.
Yes, because I was never sure where I was going to go,
mm-hmm.
what I was going to do,
mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'll tell you how I came to the documentary was
sure.
I was an actor,
mm-hmm.
I was auditioning for commercials in Los Angeles. There was a big, if you're in LA and you're auditioning for commercials, you go to casting studios, and they're casting many commercials at one time,
mm-hmm.
right? So I was in the funny fat guy category.
Right.
And so I knew all the other funny fat guys.
I was going to say, are you seeing the same people in the waiting room every
yes,
single time?
All the time. Yes. Yeah, sometimes it would break down into a fat guy recipe exchange or a dietary topic. Like, oh my God, you've lost so much weight. Are you still funny?
Where's the cookbook for this? This sounds like
yeah.
a...
Where's the what?
The cookbook for this. It sounds
yes,
like there should
the funny
be,
fat guy cookbook.
Yeah.
Yeah. Diabetes in three easy steps.
Right.
Yeah. But I would see all these Santas. They would start shooting Christmas commercials in August.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw all these Santas in groups. They, of course, all knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw them. I was like, wow, these guys all own their own suits. And they've all been driven to the auditions by their wives.
Hmm.
And I thought, this is a really strange. So it was strange to me.
Right.
Strange.
And are they in suits
subculture
when they get to the waiting?
Some of them change there. Some of them are okay. Changing in the bathroom, whatever. But they all own their own. They all bring their suit.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So you're walking into the audition.
To go be a funny fat guy to sell sausage.
Right.
And then here are these Santas, you know, saying, look at this television from Best Buy.
Right.
And I thought, there's a culture here. And then I looked it up and I came across the Amalgamated Order of Real Bearded Santas, mm-hmm. the Fraternal Order of Real Bearded Santas. And it turns out that Southern California has the largest population of real bearded Santas in the United States.
Okay.
Now it's probably, Atlanta's probably running a close second, if not a rival.
Okay.
Right. So then I thought, well, I want to make a documentary about this culture.
Oh, right? So not necessarily to be the center.
But then I was like, what is going to, you know, as I was going through it, I was like,
you need a hook.
Huh?
You need a hook.
Yeah. My mother had already died at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't occur to me until I started doing it, this would really amuse her. She would be very pleased about this.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
So there was...
Were you funny as a child?
Yeah, that was like the only thing I clung to was that.
Okay, because our parents are our first audience.
Right.
Right. And so if you can make your, there's something pleasing or fulfilling about making your parents laugh.
Right.
Right. Or making your parents entertained.
Yes.
They were not thrilled that I was an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or that I wanted to be an actor, because that's not, you're not going to survive off of that.
Right.
They were right. Okay. I didn't win that lottery.
Right.
But yes, the movie took 2.5 years to make,
or maybe
like 2 years. So we did it over the course of 2 Christmases.
All right.
And so
one there, with you participating as a Santa and one without?
No, both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The second one, we were more on track with what we were doing.
Okay.
And where we wanted to go, because we had, you know, like, I don't know if we had 100 or 200 hours worth of footage.
We
did a lot.
Yeah.
And I didn't know when to stop because Jeff, the director who I knew from Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and we were both in LA, and I went to him and said, here's what I want to do. Da-da-da. And he was the first person who was like, I'm on board.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, there's no money. And he said, I'm on board.
Okay.
Like, what? We'll figure it out.
That was the other thing was, I was curious if you had gotten started before there was any actual funding for it. Or...
It's a complicated thing, and it directly connects to my bitterness about Hollywood.
Okay.
Which is one of my experiences. Okay. Nobody succeeds alone, and you can't trust anyone.
Mm.
That's the big conundrum of Hollywood. Like, you're not going to get anywhere unless you work with other people.
Right.
And people are not reliable.
Mm-hmm. I can understand a little bit of that.
Right? So there was this guy who shall remain nameless that I met at a party at a famous person's house.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, like, yeah, I want to do this thing, da da da. And he was like, that's a brilliant idea. I will bankroll it. I will pay for it. And I was like,
don't hear that every day.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would talk to him every other week. And then I went to a party at his house. And then I went and shot the first weekend. Jeff and I went to Denver and shot with Susan and mm-hmm. her Santa school. And then that was like 5 days of shooting. And then I was spending money because I got a sound guy. I got two camera guys. Mm-hmm. Jeff was one of the camera guys. We hired a local PA. I had to pay for the school. I had to bring my own suit. So
right.
I went and got my suit from Adele's. And then the weekend is over and we've spent five digits in money.
Right.
And then I call that guy a week later and I say, listen, I've done this shooting. I can show you footage if you want. But I need to pay off my credit card. I need to pay down my credit card or pay my credit card to cover these expenses.
Sure.
And he says, oh, I don't have any money. And I was like, you said you wanted to bankroll this whole thing. Oh yeah, I'm going to have money, but I don't have any money right now. And then I found out, like, when I went to his house for that party, it's not his house,
oh,
it's his
God.
Wife's house. or his girlfriend's house.
Did you feel like you were in, like, I mean, that is like it was a stereotypical, it was a big, like, Hollywood.
It was a big point where I felt like, and it's, and maybe being an idiot helped because I didn't sit down and go, well, I did sit down and go, now I'm screwed.
Right.
But I also sat down and said, well, I can't stop now.
Right. You're in the ball's rolling.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've already gone through this bleaching process.
I'm going to, oh my God. And after the bleaching, because Jeff filmed the whole bleaching.
Yes. One of the best parts of the movie.
After the bleaching, Jeff said to me, okay, I think we have a movie. Like, and I don't know if it was because, I don't know if it was the suffering. It was like all the physical pain. Mm-hmm. He was like, no, this is great.
I think, for me.
By the way, now.
Yes.
When I get bleached, you put two packets of Sweet and Low in the bleach. The bleach still works, but it won't burn your skin.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Huge difference.
That, 'cause
6 years before I learned that.
And so then the people didn't know that were, I guess they're not bleaching beards white very often.
No.
There, so.
No. I still use the snorkel.
Okay.
I have a snorkel that I breathe through when we're bleaching the beard. Oh,
that's funny. That's,
it's, well, pretty crazy.
And if you haven't seen the movie, please. Maybe that's the only.
Know that no Santas were harmed in the filming of Becoming Santa.
The I can't get away moment when you get outside.
Yeah, yeah.
The panic is real in your eyes.
Yeah.
In that
now
moment.
It's like that in the chair. In the mall. Like, I can't get away. I have to sit here. And they keep bringing children to me.
There's that line just doesn't end.
The line doesn't end. Yeah. It does, but it's okay. But so I was like, okay, I've gone to, I can't stop now.
Right.
You know? And so I ended up spending a lot of my own money.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had, you know, I had Tyrone Finch came on as a producer and a few other people. And so then money started coming through their resources,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And how did the, I don't mean to cut you off, I'm sorry.
No, that's it.
What did anything change? So it's as far as what maybe the expectation of the documentary was. So, okay, well, now somebody else has come on and there is a little bit of money. We can add this in that maybe we didn't think we were going to
do. No, because as I learned, because I went on the film festival circuit because
mm-hmm.
we premiered at South by Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of other festivals that don't have a lot of money go to South by to cherry pick for their festivals.
Okay.
So while I was at South by, I was invited to a few other festivals,
mm-hmm.
right? And I thought exposure would be good.
Sure, why not?
it, you know.
Depends on.
Yeah, if nobody's ever heard of that festival, the exposure's not really gonna
do
you anything.
You'll make it in the local paper.
Yeah, the issue is, do I wanna visit that town?
Right.
Are they gonna give me a hotel? Okay. I forgot where I was going. Did the festival circuit, nope, don't remember.
Well, we were talking about it. I had asked if
what changed, what we added. So I met other documentarians
mm-hmm.
who were all, I was fascinated by all of them because each of them was the right person to make their doc.
Gotcha.
Right? Like they were already familiar with the topic before they made it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were really the ones that were providing a really great inside view. So there was a gentleman named Tyler Meesom who made a documentary called Sons of Perdition.
Okay.
That was about the boys who were kicked out of Jeff John's cult in Utah.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and so he was, Tyler was already sort of had a relationship to the Mormon community that I don't know what it was, but I know he had that relationship. Mm-hmm. And so those boys were willing to talk to him. And so he had an in, he already had an awareness of it. And then the woman, there was a woman whose name I should know who made an amazing documentary called Hot Coffee.
Okay.
That's all about the woman who spilled coffee on herself and got the multi-million. Yeah. And she's a lawyer and her whole documentary is about tort reform and sort of a cautionary tale mm-hmm. about how we should not be doing so much tort reform. It's too late.
Mm-hmm.
That was 12 years ago and the ship has sailed.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we all click, I agree on software, we're signing away our rights
right.
for privacy or legal action or any number of things.
I briefly
right?
worked at a company where I sold that data that you all agreed to.
You've been in the evil empire.
I would get questioned about the ethics of it all. And it wasn't until I started getting those questions going, But it is all legal, because it was legal.
It is legal because people agreed to it.
Right, it's all in there that but, you can use this.
So, so her doc was amazing. She was the perfect mm-hmm. person to make it. Tyler was the perfect person to make that.
Mm-hmm.
He went on to make other documentaries that are great, like An Honest Liar about The Amazing Randy. He's got another one that just came out. But all these other people that I met said, if you spent more than $200,000 making your doc, you have lost the game.
Interesting.
Because you don't make money on docs.
Right.
And you'll never make the money back if you spend more than that. And I wanted to keep shooting
mm-hmm.
because I had, you know, I wanted to go to Santa Claus, Indiana. I wanted to go to the Santa Claus Hall of Fame mm-hmm. in Indiana. And I wanted to interview Elvis impersonators. And Jeff was like, why do you want to, why?
Right.
And I said, because they're like some of the Santas in that once they pick up this persona,
mm-hmm.
they can't ever put it down because they have found a way to operate within the world mm-hmm. where they're immediately welcomed and everyone is glad to see them.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not that, then the world doesn't work as well for them.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
And Jeff, you know, Jeff Myers, the director, said, no, we're done. We have enough footage. We're done shooting. And of course he was right.
Right.
Because where would you wedge that Elvis thing in there?
No, it doesn't fit.
Yeah, it doesn't go.
But potential for a follow up one day, maybe. But it's
I'm gonna leave him alone.
Idea is well, that because that was, you know, one of the things I wanted to know, because watching the trailer, mm-hmm. there's a scene. Are you sitting down with Jeff in the trailer? It's you pitching. You're at a chair.
No, that's my agent.
Oh, that's your agent. Okay,
yeah.
Because you're doing the whole, this is what I want to do and thing. So I was in my head as a big fan of the movie. I go, there's so much more on the
that is
more that I want to see.
That's Mike Abrams.
Okay.
At AKA.
Okay.
They were my commercial agent. In my time in acting, I've had 4 or 5 different agents.
Mm-hmm.
They were the best. And then I. You know, eventually, I aged out of the young dad, funny fat guy category, and they let me go.
Gotcha.
But then I went back to Mike, was like, I'm going to do this Santa thing. Would you rep me as Santa? And he just took one look at me and was like, of course.
That's great.
Off you go.
Perfect. Yeah.
Have I got any commercials as Santa?
Mm-hmm.
No.
What is the,
too
what's
young.
The difference? Oh, too young?
Yeah, because the camera comes in really close for commercials, okay. And I don't have the, or I didn't used to, I might now.
Yeah.
But because this was like 10 years ago, and I was always on the young end of the Santas.
And I'll tell you, one of the things that I loved about your portrayal of Santa, as far as maybe the time frame of your age, because you were 44 when the doc was being
made. Oh my God, okay.
I'm sorry, but it was, yeah. So that was what...
Like 15 years ago.
So what I really loved about it is you have the classic look, but there is the youth in your eyes when you look at pictures of, you know, the Coca-Cola
Are you
Santa.
Hitting on me?
Yeah. Well, turn the camera.
Because you're married.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
But believe me, it's there's a youthfulness to Santa in what we see from Norman Rockwell, from the Coca-Cola Santas. He's not,
right.
He does not have those wrinkles. He has baby smooth.
You know why he doesn't have those wrinkles? And I can tell you this from the experience of having lost weight. Because they're all filled in with fat.
Right. Right. Well, it's
you know, if I lose more weight, I'm going to start to show my age.
That's been my. I've been trying to lose a few pounds as well, and I go. Uh-huh. I've been thinking, oh, I haven't seen what this looks like since I was in my early 30s, so I don't. This may not look quite the same.
It's going to be an adjustment.
But it's. But the way that you appear in the documentary. That youthfulness with the kind of timelessness of the white beard and everything, I thought that worked great to your advantage as far as the authenticity of the Santa Claus you were portraying.
I can't reasonably critique my own performance,
mm-hmm.
but I sort of, my idea of it is, well, here's the, now I've done 12 years of mall work,
mm-hmm.
okay, primarily in the same location. And every day before I go to work, and it's been, you know, 9 hours each day in the chair,
mm-hmm.
three-hour shifts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every day before I start, I can't help it anymore because it's a reflex. There are two things that are in my head before I go meet all these people. And number one is just the Mr. Rogers approach. I don't care who you are or where you've come from. I'm so happy to see you. I'm so glad you came today. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
What have you come to tell me? Mm-hmm. You know, that's number one. And then number two is the Maya Angelou quote, which I'm probably paraphrasing,
sure.
Which is no one will remember what you said or what you did, but everyone will remember how you made them feel.
Mm.
And so that's just the whole, like, come on, what do you, you know,
right.
What do you need? What do you want to tell me? Da, 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 da. Everyone is welcomed. I don't, it doesn't matter to me what your, you know, where you've come from or what you, mm-hmm. how you think things
they
should be or whatever it is.
Day.
We're, it's not even that. We are together right now. And mm-hmm. that is the joy.
Mm-hmm.
Not your baggage,
mm-hmm.
not, you know, not your any, not nothing other than we are two humans mm-hmm. who can meet and be glad to see each other.
Have you been able to carry that in other aspects of your life, or is it compartmentalized till when you've got the suit on? Because that would be, that, I mean, I'm so envious of someone that would be able to actually stay in that mindset in that space for an extended period of time.
There are people who will annoy me. I'm not. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Sure.
And I've and
well,
I,
I'm not trying to try to
and I made mis- and I've made mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, and when I make mistakes, it's always because of my perspective,
mm-hmm.
or because of how. I'm sorry, I keep touching the mic.
Oh.
It's always because of how I. Okay, so one of my mistakes,
mm-hmm.
and this is based upon my own. Three boys come in, all under the age of 10, but brothers,
mm-hmm.
right? And I just know what's going on here, because the youngest one is miserable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the other two have made his morning miserable.
Gotcha.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm clicked into that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't on the track of I'm happy to see you all, you know, da da da. And I just look at the youngest one and I say, which of your brothers would you like me to get rid of? And he immediately goes, that one, and points at the middle child. And the middle child's like, what did I do? What did I do? But I've come from the improv background,
right.
And now I'm on a track. And I just look at the middle child and I say, you'll be packed and ready on Christmas Eve.
Oh, wow.
Right. Right.
And he will be talking to his therapist about that.
Well, right. And then, of course, he laughs it off.
Right.
Their father is with them, and he's nowhere. Like, I don't know where he went, but right. he didn't hear any of it.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, after they left, I thought, oh, boy, have
oh,
I messed
gonna
up.
He's going to come back. And...
like, he's not going to come back, but that kid, that middle kid, is going to be crying buckets late at night. And the parents are like, what is wrong? Santa's going to take me away.
But the line was good.
You know, there's that thing about comedy, right? Like, it doesn't matter. It's the opposite of what we just, of Maya Angelou
exactly.
and Mr. Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how you feel. It was funny.
Right.
Right? And that's right. completely
And that's gotten me
wrong.
In quite a few times.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but, you know, as I've told you,
how 30, many thousands close to, of kids are
that's
coming
right,
across
30,000.
Yeah.
But in a sense, it doesn't matter what the quantity is.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone should be having the same experience.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody should be getting treated with equal cheer.
And I'm sure Susan Mesco touched on some of that in her class. How much of that mindset that you take was a Jack Sanderson is thinking about these things compared to what was taught?
There are Susan Mesco. There are things I disagree with her about.
Mm-hmm.
In her training, she says, Santa knows everybody.
Right.
And
Santa can pull strings for you.
Yes. And... Santa can talk to the doctor
mm-hmm.
and makes, you know, or Santa can go up to heaven and deliver that message to your grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Da, da, da. And I feel like that, and, you know, she's a different discussion. Cause she does a good job with her school.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, I'm not a religious person.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in some way I must be a spiritual person because
sure.
I believe in, you know, with the energy between people and
the human
trying
spirit.
To evaluate, mm-hmm. trying to assign value to humanity
mm-hmm.
and respect it without the baggage that society has put on it.
Right.
Right. And so when a child comes to me, like, because I've had children ask me, can you save my mommy? I had a little girl ask me.
I can't imagine that.
Can you can imagine it because I've lived it, Paul. So a little girl asks me, you know, can you keep, she's flat out says, can you keep my mommy alive? Right. And what would Susan Mesko say?
Right.
Well, I will talk to the doctors and make sure they do their best and da 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 da. And as I said to you before we started, one of the foundations of the way I operate in the world is anything other than the truth is a waste of my time. Mm-hmm. Right. Which says the guy who's playing Santa, right? Who's lying about being Santa
we'll
to children.
We'll get to
right?
this.
But this little girl said, can you keep my mommy alive? And my belief is the best thing I can do for her is to acknowledge the experience that she's having. Mm-hmm. To tell her I can or I will try is to not acknowledge the experience that she's having, but to assist in denial that will not serve her or help her or make her feel like anyone was on her side.
Absolutely.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I consider myself very fortunate in that moment to have the things that I believe all operate in real time, where she says, can you keep my mommy alive? And I say, where is your mommy? And she points over there, and there's a woman with no hair in a scarf who's clearly going
through it.
She's going through cancer treatments, and you know, and they've told this girl, they've either told the girl, mommy's, you know, may or may not, da 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 da. All I can say to her is, I am so sorry that it's happening to you. I'm so sorry that's happening in your world. All I can tell you is that I know your mommy is always going to love you. Whether she's here or not, you will always have her love, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have a hug. She starts crying. I'm done. I start crying. Right. The mom sees it, and the mom is like, okay, we're done here. Let's go. And, you know, takes her daughter and off she goes.
Oh, my goodness.
But because the mom is like, ugh, I don't have time. You know.
Right. She's 15 times a day already going through that,
that's
that
right.
process. Yeah.
That's right. Yes, she's the one who needs support, right? Mm-hmm. No, please do not let Santa become someone who needs support with your problem. Right. You know.
But yeah. I think, and I want to pull, because I appreciate you telling that story. And
yeah.
That's.
And it doesn't happen all the time. It's
sure.
like, you know,
but you have
maybe
to
it's
have
once
be,
a week.
You have to be prepared for it. Well, that's still more, because you know? Susan talks about that.
Right.
Is people are going to come to you with all of your
And
troubles.
She's absolutely right about people coming to you with the strangest things.
Right. And I don't, and I think.
And I get a lot of adults.
That are.
That come to see me.
Or.
No, they know. Mm-hmm. Right. But they come to play. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm an improviser. I'm,
sure.
I'm down for that.
Yeah.
I've come to play.
Right.
You know. But I'm still going to, even though I'm pretending to be Santa, I'm still going to be honest.
Right.
So I had these two girls come, and one girl's like, would you call my boyfriend and tell him he should propose to me for Christmas? I'm like, there's not much of a line. Okay. Right? And so she says, like, I'm with Santa Claus, and he wants to talk to you. I'm like, okay. Get on the phone with him, and I say, well, what are your Christmas plans? I don't know. I'm going to da 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 da. Have you thought about buying anyone an engagement ring for Christmas? And he says, and she can't hear it,
right.
I got to spend money on car parts. I don't have money for an engagement ring. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, would you ever?
Right.
Right? He's like, no. And I'm just like, are there any other boys you'd like to marry? You know? And she's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, Santa's got to go.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can play, but it might not go great.
Right.
You know?
Hey, be careful what you ask for.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, you don't... In the documentary, was it a... How purposeful was it to not disclose your performance background? Was it purposeful?
No. It was not. That was not intentional at all.
Okay. And because I wasn't... Because there is a... And I've watched it so many times, I'm 99% certain that you didn't
mention it.
Mention it specifically that you have an improv background or things along those lines. So I think there's a, and it helps the doc, in my opinion,
that I don't mention
that
it.
That you don't mention it in the,
because it's not what it's about.
Right. There's a natural to this guy is the like you. There's a naturalness to your portrayal, and the way that you are able to fall into these situations.
But even when I was a substitute teacher briefly, in the LA public school system, I shave the beard off after Christmas because Santa's got to go away, or if he doesn't leave, we're not happy to see him again next year.
It's nice to just wash the skin, exfoliate a little.
I don't go that far. Okay. I just go down to a 5 o'clock shadow.
Okay, there you go.
But I'm substitute teaching. I've shaved the beard off, and I'm walking around the classroom. And it's a different classroom every day, And children behind my back are going, ho, 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 ho. I'm like, I don't even have the beard.
Wait, is this before the doc? No, this is after it came out.
This is long after. No, they don't know about the doc.
Oh, really?
No. And these are high schoolers who were, hadn't been born when I made that thing, or grade schoolers who hadn't been, whatever it is. No, they just somehow are picking up the vibe, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, okay. And so I'm like, okay, I guess I just
exude some Santa.
So no, I was not purposefully hiding my.
And it may have been in parts that just got, because if they had kept the scene in where you're talking to your agent, that obviously discloses that.
Right, that's just in the trailer.
Right, but yeah. That's.
But there was not there were, that was not intentional.
Okay, because it does. I think it worked. It works.
You
well
know, if and, if. In the vein of anything other than the truth being a waste of time, one of the things that some people approached me about afterwards was, there's nothing in the doc that says you're gay, right? Because I'm gay. Well, that was my response, right? And some people were like, yeah, but there's some, we see you like wearing a wedding ring in the doc. And I'm like, well, that's not mine, that's Santa's.
Santa's married to,
No, and but it's also because it's because I guess it's not. It has nothing to do with Santa. But at the same time, all these other Santas have their wives, and they all dress up as Mrs. Claus. I met maybe one or two Santas who were gay, and their partner would dress up as an elf. But they were never, as far as the other Santas knew, they were just like, they're just friends, or we don't know what's going on there.
Within the community, is there a bit of a conservativeness with the other Santas?
Oh, there's a lot. I've run into it's a very lot conservative. Of... It is a very conservative, not entirely, but it is a very conservative group.
Right.
And in that sense, some of them, I would guess, because I'm obviously not sitting around with them while they're working, right? But based on some conversations with some of them and some interchanges, I think that, or some exchanges of conversation, I would guess that there's a few of them for whom it would get in the way. Mm-hmm. Okay, like for instance, I had a boy who was 9 years old ask me, he was like 8 or 9. And I said, what would you like for Christmas? Mm-hmm. He says, I want high heels. And I wasn't sure I was getting it right. And I said, you mean Heelys? Like sneakers with wheels on them. No, I want high heels like my mommy wears. And then I'm just in stupid land. I'm stupid. I'm like, what are you going to do with them?
Right.
And he's like, wear them. I'm like, all right, I'm going to work on it. I'll see what I can do, And then he goes off to whatever little play area there is in the area. And because I'm Santa, I can go to the photographer. I can just look at the photographer and say, give me 1 minute. And I go find his mom. And I said to her, your son wants high heels for Christmas. Because this is the only way he's going to get them.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And she says, I know, I don't know what to do. And I was like, okay, look, Santa's only got a few seconds.
Right.
Repression leads to depression. You get him the heels. And she says, I said, go to the Disney store, get him some princess heels. Right? Done. And she's like, oh, that's a great idea. Thank you. Da, da, da. I go back in my chair and I just feel like, well, I'm done for the day.
Right.
Like, achievement unlocked. But I don't think, I would guess, and I'm sure I'll get in trouble for saying it, 70% of the other Santas would be like, but you're a boy.
Mm-hmm. You don't want heels.
Right.
Like, who knows what it has to do with anything?
Right.
Who knows? This is, you know, maybe it's just for pretend. Maybe it's for whatever.
Right.
Let them do, you know.
Let the kid be
who they're, whoever they're going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's when you try to constrain it that you make it a problem.
Right.
If you let him work through it or whatever he's doing, mm-hmm. it's.
And I think that's what surprised me a little bit.
And it's not part of, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
It's not part of, I like you no matter who you are.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I never cease to be amazed at how surprised children are that I listen to them. Because there's a contingent of the guys who do this who are performance forward on, I'm this and I'm that, and you've come to see me, and
John
I'm
Lovitz
da da da.
Is, Santa Claus is with the great thespian.
Yeah, sort of. Plays, yeah, it's Santa not, because the secret of improv and the secret of acting is a good scene, the way to make a good scene is to make it about the other person.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime anybody comes to see me, the visit is about them.
Yeah.
I want to know what you want. I want to know how you're doing. I want to know if you're listening at school.
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing the things for you that are going to help you in the long run?
Right.
You know?
And that's clear in the doc, the way that you engage with people. And because you, it's not about you just being
the guy.
You're getting down on your knees and talking to the kids. You're asking everybody, you know,
right.
what they want. Have you been good? Have you been, you know, you're talking to the parent. Like there is a, it is a conversation
yeah.
there with everybody as opposed to a monologue of a man.
You didn't come to see me to hear about my day.
Right.
You came to tell me what you want or what's mm-hmm. going on with you. Mm-hmm. So I mean, plenty of children show up and don't ask for anything.
Right.
They just want to tell you what they did today mm-hmm. or, you know, or what's going on with them. Like the child who comes mm-hmm. and says, can you save my mom? That's
right.
not, at no point did she ask for anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, she asked for the biggest thing one could right. ask for, right?
But
I can't do that.
Right.
But, you know? But there's also children who come and ask for things for their mom. Mm. Like, you know, one boy was like, my mom needs some new house slippers. I'm like, all right, I'll see what I can do.
Right.
Da, da, da. And then I whisper to that mom, like, could you wrap up some house slippers for yourself and have them be for me? You know,
and as a parent who has not gone through that experience, I don't know if that's how normal that is for the Santa to be like, here's the thing that you need to
oh
to get out.
When children ask for something,
I don't know how it works.
When children ask for something, well, first of all, any parent who brings their child to see Santa
mm-hmm.
is 95% of the time a parent who is curating that child's childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And the parent will stand behind the child, and when the child says, I want the Apple 12 phone, or the Apple, you know, 346, wherever
right.
we're at, right? And the parent will stand behind and look at me and go, mm-mm. And I'll say, how old are you? And I'll say, 8. And I'll say, oh, you can't have a phone till you're 12.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can ask again when you're 12.
My dad, a classic line from the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory with the kid that asked for the Colt 45. And the dad laughs and goes, not till you're 12, son. So my
yeah.
dad used that line all my childhood. So when I turned 12, you know, it was, Dad, I've got some receipts here.
We yeah, I need that Colt 45 now.
Yeah, we have some ketchup.
And you mean gun, but I hear beer.
Right, well, no, I wanted the Billy D. Williams. No, yeah. No, no. But so with, we've sort of...
we're dressing up for philanthropy.
Yes, and with...
I get paid to be in the mall.
So let's talk about this. As long as we're on to the mall subject a little bit. So with all of the kids that are coming across your lap,
mm-hmm.
In the documentary, you do a marathon Polar Express
yeah.
as your first trip out yeah. as Santa Claus.
Yeah. I don't know if it comes across, but that was a 6-hour tour. We did three 90-minute rides. I don't even remember.
It might have been 4 90-minute rides, but that...
And I did it wrong, so... Because there's two Santas, because mm-hmm. the train is so big, so I was just one of the Santas.
Oh, okay.
And we each go down the train, we see each other in the middle, like, hey man, how's it going? See you mm-hmm. later. And then we walk, go back again,
mm-hmm.
right? This guy, fresh as a daisy by the end of the day. Right.
Right.
Because he didn't pick anybody up. He didn't sit down. He was like, he would just stand and you'd have to position yourself. Mm-hmm. And I realized like, oh, I knocked myself out because I was being super accommodating.
You're getting everyone
on your
lap.
But that's the game.
Yeah.
Like, what are you? But I get it. He was older and he was pacing himself, mm-hmm. and I'm sure he was doing as much as, you know,
he could.
That's my assumption. Mm-hmm. It's an assumption.
And you've never gone back to do the Polar Express again after?
I have not, but that was, okay. you know, a freebie.
Right. But it was, I wasn't sure if you, because it didn't, I know you said
everything else is a freebie. Like, yeah. you know, you don't get paid for the parade. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, yeah.
Yeah. It, so
there's the hospital visits are interesting because mm-hmm. one of the things I learned was, I never charge for a hospital sure. visit. But from a business perspective, I am happy to come visit as many people as you want me to go see at the hospital. Mm-hmm. All I'm going to ask for is that you pay for my suit to be dry cleaned when I'm done. Mm. Because if it's nothing, if you go and it doesn't cost them anything or there's no investment on their side, mm-hmm. your time is not respected or they don't respect you for what you're
That's
doing.
That's interesting.
So if there's just a little fee mm-hmm. of like, just pay, because you can't go through the hospital and then wear that suit anywhere else.
Right. That's true.
Right. You're carrying some stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
That's interesting.
Yeah. And so I was just like, if you just pay for the, and that's if I'm on my own, mm-hmm. right? So when a corporate, okay, so I have a lot to say about philanthropy mm-hmm. and giving and contributions because it feels like, for a while I felt like there are plenty of celebrities who give money or who have charities that they sponsor mm-hmm. and it's, depending upon the celebrity, it's more of a PR move
right.
than something that they care about. Mm-hmm. Right.
You need to do something.
A manager will tell their client, like, you've got to have some positive visibility on something. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
And so that sort of gave me a cynical feeling about philanthropy. Mm-hmm. When the movie was over, long story short, I heard all these Santas talk to me about the Hong Kong job. I couldn't find anybody who had done it. Mm-hmm. Right. And the Hong Kong job is you go to Hong Kong as Santa Claus. And it supposedly pays really, really well. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, who do you do it for? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like some corporation. And they don't know.
So it's not a mall. You're just going to.
So I finished the movie. We had been at South By. It premiered on the Oprah Winfrey Network. Mm-hmm. And Jennifer Andrews, who ran the Victor Nevada Santa Claus School in Canada, which we also filmed that, calls me and says, do you want to go to Hong Kong? And I got the Hong Kong job. Okay. So I said, of course I want to go to Hong Kong. What are you talking about?
Right.
And so I went to Hong Kong. This was in 2012.
Sure.
As the official Santa for Cartier Jewelers. Okay. And so I was in a Cartier store, which was crazy because children don't come into the Cartier
right.
store.
Right.
Right. But then Cartier was like, we can't, you're gonna be in the store as a fixture for a few days. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to put you in front of one of our stores in a mall okay. and there'll be free photographs for everybody, mm-hmm. right? And then they sent me to, in Hong Kong, an orphanage and a giant hospital. I think it was St. Elizabeth's Hospital, okay. something like that. And they told me, like, we're gonna be doing these things. And then they had me meet with their publicist, and the publicist was briefing me on radio interviews they wanted me to do.
Okay.
And I said to the publicist, do you want me to mention the hospital visits or the, you know, visiting the orphanage? And the mm-hmm. publicist got really angry and said, we do not talk about that. We do not talk about the philanthropy we do. We do it because it is right, not because we want credit for it. Hmm. So do not mention that is private information. Blew that. but I had so much respect for that mm-hmm. because they put out, I mean, they're Cartier.
Sure.
In my mind, they're made of money.
Right.
Right. But they sent me to this orphanage where it was children in school, mm-hmm. right? There's the classroom and behind the classroom, is the dormitory room for that class. Mm-hmm. So there's 30 to 40 children in each class, and it went K through 10.
Okay.
Right? I went into every classroom, gave every child a backpack, a packet like this thick of drawing papers, pencils, markers, mm-hmm. and a new jacket for every single child throughout the building.
Wow.
Now, the thing that, as I'm like getting a chill remembering it, the thing that the children, it was great. It's the perfect, you know, mm-hmm. children just need to draw.
Yeah.
Give them an outlet for stuff, right? But my takeaway from that experience was, because I was with the children in the classroom, they were all over me. So the thing that those children needed was physical contact, because they didn't have it, right?
Yeah.
And it was a lot. It was a really tiring morning.
For sure.
But I went through that whole thing and like gave all that stuff away, and then I went to the hospital. And the thing that I'll say about hospital visits is the nurses and the people who work there, they need it as much as the children,
because mm-hmm.
they're with them all day.
Mm-hmm.
And they mostly see these children suffering.
Right.
Because if they weren't suffering, they wouldn't have to stay there overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it's as important to the for the people who are working with the children to be able to see those children have fun or be excited about something. Mm-hmm. It's really great for them to see that child in a different state than what they are constantly experiencing them in.
Right.
You know?
You know, where was your comfort level to go as this character, because you can't escape it. You've got the beard.
You mean just every day out in the world?
Once you decided, I'm gonna try this, bleaching the beard. I've got, you know, you walking through the airport at one point in the documentary.
Yeah.
You know, you've got your coat on because you can't put that in luggage to check, I imagine. But or for the visual of the show.
Yeah,
but
it's a bit.
You can't hide it. To an extent.
As I said, even when I shave my beard.
So
and I'm in a classroom, children are going, oh, yeah.
What was your comfort level at when you first started to realize that eyes are on you that might not have otherwise been?
Well, I think as I say at the end of the doc, now I know what it would be like to be pretty.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Elvis thing that I said earlier, where people recognize you
mm-hmm.
as this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to figure out, is he? If I say something to him, is it going to be rude or is he going to play?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it depends on who you are.
Sure.
How I am. If it's a child,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to play.
Right. If you know somebody that's just out to try.
I'll tell you, it's so crazy. I did a job in Philadelphia. I got flown to Philadelphia for one night
mm-hmm.
to make an appearance at a Christmas party. I don't know. It was Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, because
mm-hmm.
I'd never been there. Sorry, Pittsburgh. I hope I don't have to come back. It was like they had never seen a fat white guy with a beard before.
Like the city.
People were slowing down in traffic as I'm walking down the street. Yeah, it was really weird. And then when I was leaving, and this was in 2012
mm-hmm.
or 2011, airport security took me aside and gave me a thorough going over. And then somebody from airport security followed me through the airport all the way to the gate. I guess, I don't know if they thought that I was Muslim or some, there was some like.
Just because you got a big beard, you must.
Yeah.
That's so strange.
And then this guy sits, this security guy, like I sit down at the gate
because
mm-hmm. I am chronically early. Mm-hmm. And this guy who's been following me comes, he sits down right across from me and just looks at me, right? And then they start boarding and they board children first, right?
Yeah.
So this couple has a 5-year-old and he's looking, he sees me, you know, and he and his parents start down the ramp and he takes his chance
mm-hmm.
and he runs from his parents and runs up to me.
Mm-hmm.
And said, Santa, I need a train for Christmas. My goodness, have you been a good boy? I do the whole thing with him. And I'm like, all right, you stay on the nice list. And I'll do my best. We'll see what happens. Because you never say yes.
Right.
Right. And he goes off. Parents are like, I'm sorry. I'm like, it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm here to collect wishes.
Right.
You know? And the guy sitting across from me just looks at me and goes, you're Santa Claus? And I say, yeah. And he just goes, oh, gets up and walks away. It's like, really, Pittsburgh? Like,
you know what?
we take that apology back. I don't think there's anything to apologize for. Clearly, the city needs some.
They need some more cheer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it was crazy.
If you're a real bearded Santa and you need a place to work, there seems to be
there's some work available in Pittsburgh. Yeah. Pittsburgh could use some cheer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, over the years, you've gotten more used to it.
I was used to it immediately.
Oh, were you? Okay.
Yeah.
That was what I wasn't sure about.
Because the other thing that I don't put these things together. I'm mm-hmm. just, I, you know, I grew up in such a way that I'm constantly living in survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I never, my biggest mistake was not making a long-term plan.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out because I spent by the time I made the documentary, I had already spent 10 years working as a nanny.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had been an improv teacher, I had been an actor, I had been in, you know, over 60 plays.
Right.
And I was a geek.
Mm-hmm.
So, and to an extent, there were ways in which I did not see myself until I saw the documentary.
Okay.
And when there's this Santa in the documentary who, at the school, who takes us to Target mm-hmm. to look at all the toys.
Right.
We're in that Target and I realize, okay, he's a nice guy, but he doesn't know anything.
Right.
He's literally just walking through, pointing at things and naming them on the shelf.
Right.
Right? And yeah. I'm like, well, that's, you know, well, there's a Captain America movie coming out. So there's this Captain America toy.
Yeah, and kudos to your editor as they're cutting through that with your corrections and then the
making me look like a jerk.
Well, you know, I don't think you look like a jerk. I love that there's a really quick cut of just being like, oh, Cranium's a good game. Right. And then like a hard cut to the next thing, and just like just that reaction of their they weren't ready for you.
Yeah. During the pandemic, I ended up I have my friend Nick has a son who was during the pandemic he was 7,
mm-hmm.
and Nick calls me and says, "Listen, my wife and I are both working from home. The kids are not at school. I'm buying you a Sony PlayStation subscription. I need you to play Minecraft with Henry." It's like, okay.
Right.
And I didn't know much Minecraft.
Sure.
I played a little bit of it.
You knew of it. Or.
But I was also a teacher and had worked with children.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a total geek and I took the teacher approach to mm-hmm. it. And so I went and did research on it. So when I would play with Henry, I'd be like, okay, I made these potions. And if you drink this potion, mm-hmm. you can swim underwater for 4 minutes without needing air. So today we're going to drink these potions and go find a dungeon under the ocean.
Right.
Right. And it's like I tried to plan what we were going to mm-hmm. do. Right. And then we would build things. And then I got obsessed. So I was playing it even when I wasn't playing with Henry. And I finished the whole thing. Like, I didn't realize until I really dug into it, there's a big story there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually finish it.
I didn't realize that.
And then I go back to the mall mm-hmm. as Santa, and children are saying, you will say to me, you probably never heard of it. I'd like a diamond sword. Mm-hmm. I'm like, are you sure you want a diamond sword? Are you sure you don't want an obsidian sword? You know, like, because I've just been
extended their belief in Santa by another 3 years, probably. Maybe.
Or they think, wow, Santa's really got a lot of free time. Yeah. So I'm like, have you been to the Nether? Like, no. I'm like, okay, well, you've got to make an arch out of obsidian and ignite it with some flint, and then you can go to the Nether.
And they're going to remember that the rest of their lives. There is that
like,
aspect.
This guy knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a boy who said to me, what would you like for Christmas? You probably never heard of it. It's called a sonic screwdriver. And I just look at him and say, bow ties are cool. And then he knows. Santa knows Doctor Who.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's
That's fun.
There's these other gentlemen that are doing it
mm-hmm.
are not geeks.
Mm-hmm.
They're not playing video games. Mm-hmm. They're not watching.
And they may
maybe other
own...
Santas my age might be doing it. Because, as I said, I've been on the younger end.
Sure, you know? Sure. But I think that's the title of the show is Why We Bust. But that's essentially, you know, we...
Because it's fulfilling.
That's exactly it. Right. That's the quest is what is driving us to, you know, in our sense, like, on the 4th of July in 95 degree Chicago heat, throw on a full Air Force
jumpsuit.
Flight suit with a 40-pound light-up backpack, uncomfortable combat boots, and then go walk 5 miles in the heat
and wave.
And it's,
you know, you do get the kids, but it's sometimes it's just parents, but it's that disbelief of, hey, look, like you weren't expecting to have a moment, you know, as an observer or somebody else. Like for me, it's, I put on something to be as, I'm trying to be as authentic to the movies as I can with, you know, what I've put together. And if I can
get right.
somebody out there that moment where they weren't expecting to get a smile or
right.
something along those lines, but I was able to give them that, even though I'm sweating
right.
buckets
and uncomfortable,
you know,
yeah.
and all that. But you know, it's there just because I don't think there are enough for me. There's not enough smiles in the world
right.
in the day. And if somebody's smiling at what we're doing, sometimes it's cynical, but for the most part, that's a genuine, that you've touched some part that's causing an emotional reaction.
And that's kind of what I'm doing in the mall. Mm-hmm. Because even if, because based on how it has been set up at the mall where I had been working, everybody can see me.
Mm-hmm.
It is not hidden. At some of the you know, I've walked through two malls in Los Angeles where they have had Santa, but he's in this little house.
Yeah.
And you only see him if you're having a visit with him at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's better to be like open air and everybody can see. Mm-hmm. Like I'm on the first floor, there's a balcony above us, there's always people looking down. You know, or people walk, like, and wave at the people walking by.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on a float that's not moving.
Right.
You know?
Well,
but it makes people smile. They see it, and it's part of the Christmas cheer. It's part of the Christmas element that it's going on.
And we went to a mall that my familiarity was, they tuck Santa away, like
yeah.
an attraction. But last year we took our daughter to get
a picture
to the mall, and she did not want to get it. She, mm-hmm. you know, as a two-year-old,
yeah,
well,
I deal with a lot of that.
But we could not get her to leave, but she could see.
Right.
So we're outside of that, but she's staying put, watching.
Right.
So she still got to feel the magic and the experience without, you know, she wasn't comfortable to
without being there. Terrified.
Right.
But because some parents know their child is going to cry and they want
for the picture.
Not just for the picture. I think it's an unconscious revenge thing.
Oh, really? Like
yeah.
it was done to them, so they're going to do it?
No,
to, their kids,
to the or? Child. Like, we have completely changed our lives for you.
Oh, wow.
And we do so much accommodating, and you're so demanding as a 2-year-old.
We want this, so you're just
we want this picture of you in terror.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I hope those people, there's fewer and fewer of them out there.
Well, as I said, most parents are curating their child's childhoods, mm-hmm. which is why they go to see Santa.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And there's always trepidation. There are always children that are a little scared.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you tone it down, you're a little quieter.
Yeah.
You know, or you reflect it, or you say to them.
And that's where your improv background, you know, I think, really,
cuz it's always about the other person.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And matching energy and all these things like you said.
Right.
And that's
and even more so in meeting with special needs children,
mm-hmm.
because at that point you're just it's whatever they you take everyone how they arrive,
sure,
and it's whatever they do,
mm-hmm.
they're gonna sit on my lap, they're gonna dig through my beard, they're gonna, you know, hit my head or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like this is their experience,
right?
You know. No, it doesn't matter how I feel about it.
Right.
As long as they have a good time, or mm-hmm. the parents get the photo that they want, whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever it is. So many people ask me, "Has a child ever peed on you?"
Mm, because I didn't think to ask
this
you
is
that
where they
sure.
this because this is where people go.
Right.
It bothers me when people ask me, but no, you didn't ask me, so I'm telling you. Only one time. But it was an 11-year-old girl with cerebral palsy,
mm.
and I so didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, she's having a nice time. Why am I gonna ruin her time mm-hmm. by being like, ah!
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
This is why I have two suits.
One of the questions that I
because like when we're done, when her parents have got her picture, and I've understood what she would like for Christmas. And then she leaves. I will very quietly go change my suit,
mm-hmm.
and it's only and in 12 years, you know, but somewhere between 25,000 and 30,000 children a year,
mm-hmm.
it's only happened once.
Mm.
You know, every once in a while, someone will hand me a stinky baby.
Yeah,
and I'll say, why don't you go change the diaper and we'll hold your place at the front of the line.
Well, that's nice.
Because the baby is uncomfortable and I'm going to have a hard time smiling in the presence of this stink.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, let's just make it, make everybody comfy for what we're going to do.
Right.
You know, that's, you don't have to get back in line. We'll just do this.
That's,
you know,
and again, putting the fact that you're trying to prioritize their experience first is, I think, at the
as you're making me think about it,
mm-hmm.
I'm still getting something out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I still, it gives me some purpose
mm-hmm.
and some achievement
mm-hmm.
to have helped make these people happy or to have given them a good time.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with adults who come to see me and I banter with them or joke with them while maintaining the role of Santa. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all,
you know,
it's putting positivity into the world.
Yes, absolutely. And then I think the way
I don't often think of it that way, but that's what it's doing.
Right. Well, I try to, I don't have a lot of mantras or anything, but I want to leave a net positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the end of the day, I just want to have not subtracted something, you know, in the over.
As someone who spends a lot of time in traffic in Los Angeles, I don't know that I can do that. I don't know that I'll be leaving a net positive.
Well,
I won't tint the windows of my car because other cars won't see me flipping them off.
You know, Jack, I take compliments poorly.
Okay, so
I'm going to pay you one. And so please bear with me on this one. It's hard. I can imagine. This is a documentary you did how many years ago?
12 years ago, at least.
It could be difficult, I think, if I were in your shoes to understand that, yes, there are those days where you're having the bad traffic and all that stuff. There are people like me scattered throughout the world that when they think of Jack Sanderson, they think of something really positive. And because you've contributed to their overall happiness.
Well, thank you.
So there's going to be the traffic thing, but I don't want you to worry
that I'm leaving a negative.
That may be a net negative because I think just if there's a few extras of me out there, I don't think you have to worry too much because, like you mentioned, and I can't remember if it was during or before, but you have a special place in our heart and you're a special part of our season. And a lot of it is because of the who you are stepping into that character, who you were outside of just, you know, the red suit.
Right. And
so you could, who you were contributed a lot to who's in that red suit. And that reflects on the character of the Santa that, you know, when my wife and I were talking, I was like, oh yeah, when we think of Santa Claus, we think of Jack.
Like,
the Jack Santa that sticks with us. You know, growing up, it might have been the Tim Allen Santa Claus or things like that. But now it's if we are to suspend our disbelief into who Santa Claus is, it's the Jack Sanderson Santa.
Well, thank you.
And I just want to thank you because it's not easy to go about doing what you're doing. And
you know, I headed into year 13, and every year I'm like, this is the last time.
Right, and I wasn't sure because you say that's one of the great parts of the doc is, I don't know if I'm going to do this again.
Did he do it?
Very last line, go, I might do it.
Maybe
again.
One more year. Well, see, how could I say no to Hong Kong?
Right,
and I did that for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and then
Jennifer called me again and said, well, I have a job for you in Calgary,
mm-hmm.
and then here we are, 11 years later in
Sam
Calgary.
With a cowboy hat.
No. But every you know, I'm sure somewhere there's a Santa with a cowboy hat.
Yeah. Well,
and he's the perfect Santa for his community.
If you ever have to go back during the stampede season,
I've had enough experience with the high desert.
Okay.
In California that I'm like, I don't know if I need to be in Calgary.
Be there for that. Yeah. But well,
and this year I'm going to Nova Scotia.
Okay. Is it anything that you want to plug for the show?
I don't need to. I don't know if you have a lot of listeners in Nova Scotia.
18 people across the world that are going to maybe be able to spread.
But it lives there forever.
Yes, that's true.
Right?
But I can't thank you enough, Jack.
Thank you. You've been a pleasure to be interviewed by.
It means a lot to me. You've meant a lot to my family. just to be part of our Christmas season.
It's not my fault.
Our daughter may learn to regret it, or to
she's going to have her own.
Yeah,
she'll have her own thing.
She will. But, yeah. But I want to thank you for doing this in person with me today.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Why We Bust. See you guys next time when we look at another Ghostbuster and find out what makes them tick.
Memoriam Development. Memoriam Development.